Okay. All right. So what I want to talk to you today is I thought this would be a great opportunity to sort of pull together a lot of the work that I had done over the years and stuff that we're still evaluating on mutation breeding with ornamentals. And it turns out that Wayne, our next speaker, and I were both on the same campus at Tifton, and Wayne was gracious enough to radiate a lot of things for us over the years. So, Wayne, I hope you enjoy this because everything that's been treated we'll talk about today. So I'm just going to share my experience, give you a little bit of an introduction, and then talk about some of the things that we've found and that I've learned over the years working primarily with gamma radiation. So basically, the term mutation breeding showed up first as a German word in 1944, and there were the authors. But mutation was originally defined in a series of articles by De Vries back around the turn of the century. So people have been sort of talking about that for just over 100 years now, and there's kind of the classic description of what mutations and mutation breeding are. So basically, induced mutagenesis is using radiation or chemical mutagens. I'm doing a lot of EMS work now. Again, what we're going to talk today mostly about is gamma radiation. But we're talking about mutant plants produced by induced mutagenesis, are also referred to as induced mutagens. You have, with plant breeding, we have our F1s, our F2s, et cetera. When we're talking about these induced mutagens, if it's seed that's treated, they're usually M1 plants. The next generation becomes M2s. If you're doing vegetatively propagated ones, so you mutate the vegetatively propagated material, it becomes an M1, V1, and then as you propagate that successfully, and so that's sort of the designations you might see in the literature. And so seed propagated stuff is M1, M2, and then you get the M1, V1, et cetera, for your vegetatively propagated material, if you're not familiar with it. So mutation breeding is definitely applicable to seed-grown and vegetatively propagated plants. We've tried doing a little bit of both. And mutagenesis is an attractive approach for modifying one or two traits without disturbing the basic genotype. And I'll talk a little bit about that as we go through, because we've got some good examples of that, of really when you want to start with as close to something that you want to end up with as opposed to starting with something drastically different. Seed are the most commonly treated materials when we're doing this, but mutations can be induced vegetatively as well. India sort of leads the world on mutation breeding, at least as far as ornamentals, and they've released over 100 cultivars that have been introduced, a lot of floricultural crops, a lot of chrysanthemums over the years. Okay, so characteristics that we can modify and look for, and some of the things we've tried, flowering and ripening time. So if you have, say, something that blooms under short days, you want it to bloom under long days, it might be something you can get towards. Adaptability to all sorts of things. Photoperiod insensitivity, again, dealing with flowering. Changes in growth habits. You might have a tall plant. You want to go for a dwarf plant there. Disease and insect resistance. There's been a lot of work done there. Improved quality and yield for whatever your crop may be. And then also pollen abortion and sterility. I think Wayne's going to talk about that more in the next presentation. So those are the things you can use. One of the nice things about using ionizing radiation or gamma rays is, one, there's few disposal problems. I was just talking to somebody about fast neutrons, and they're talking about, sometimes you get your material back out, and it's still radioactive. And so that may not be a good thing. Application's fairly easy as long as you have some sort of source of gamma rays. Reproducibility is high because you can treat them at the same rates. Penetration is very good, so penetration of the rays into whatever tissue you're treating is known to be very good with gamma rays. And then the rate of mutation frequency is considered to be fairly high compared to other methods. And so there are definite advantages to using gamma rays to do your mutation work. Basically, the main term these days used is the gray, which is a GY. It's basically defined as 1 joule of energy absorbed by 1 kilogram of matter. If you go into a lot of the old literature, you'll see all your dosages in kilorads. Well, again, everything's in grays now, but one rad's 0.01 grays, or 1 kilorad is 10 grays if you need the conversion factors there. And so, again, everything we're going to talk about today was treated with a cobalt-60 source in Tifton, Georgia, at the Coastal Plain Experiment Station. So, all right. So what I'd like to do quickly is just sort of run through some of the crops that we've worked with, what we did to them, and what we found out with the various crops. And of course, Buddleia butterfly plant, certainly we wanted to go after sterility on this one. It's become a sort of a weedy species out in the western United States, England, places like that. And so we were fortunate to be working with a commercial nursery who had a large collection of plants. So getting seed was no problem. And so we just got large batches of seed. We treated them with 150, 200, 250 gray in 2005. We probably overshot it a little bit because we put a ton of seed. And for those rates, our average number of seedlings, we didn't count because if you look at Buddleia seed, it's almost like dust. So we didn't count how many we were starting with. We just put a lot in a pot and treated them. But our survivors for 150, 200, 250 were 17, 14, and 5. And so we were definitely hitting an LD50 because we were putting probably a couple hundred seeds per pot in there. So I would say, you know, these are the experiences you learn. There's not a lot of information in the literature on these ornamentals as to what to do. But where we've got the data, you know, I'll show it like this. So basically, we created an M1 population. We collected open-pollinated seed. So one of the things you're after quite often with these mutations, a lot of them are recessive, so you have to go to the M2 population to see anything. Unfortunately, what we got was, and this is hard to believe for a Buddleia, but most of our M1 plants were very weak and died in the field. And so we definitely probably overdosed them. But we were able to get a bunch of M2 seed out of the ones that did survive, and even that, those plants eventually died off, so they were quite weak. But out of that M2 generation, we got about 250 seed to germinate, and out of those 250, we did get this one here that is a female sterile plant. And so we did get one female sterile. We haven't tested the pollen on it to see. The flower spikes aren't your typical wide spreading Buddleia. They're almost like an inverted test tube, a little bit smaller. It flowers heavily. Obviously, it's not producing, but it doesn't have the big showy flower spikes like a lot of the commercial, and nobody's shown any commercial interest in it at this point, even though it is sterile. So if you're looking for a sterile Buddleia, talk to me later, and we've got one for you. So that was sort of our experience with Buddleias. Euonymus miscellaneous was another one that we were interested in. It's not a problem in the southeastern United States, but in the northeast, it's a big problem with reseeding. And so we had lower rates on it. You can see we're at 50, 100, and 150 there. We had 200 seed that we treated for each one of these. And you can see our survival rates there were 164, 78, and 3. And so obviously 150 was a little bit too hot. And somewhere around 100 GY was looking pretty good in terms of calculating an LD50 on those there. What we did on this, and why I was talking about, you know, size and selecting something pretty close, was we just ordered seed of Euonymus elatus. And what we got were Euonymus elatus like I'd never seen in my life. They were fastidious monsters. And so if you had untreated seed, they just grew upright and had miserable fall color, not the characteristics that you would ever want for. So again, starting with something fairly close to what you want to end up with would be a good thing. But anyway, since we were down in Tifton in the coastal plain, we don't get enough chilling hours. What will happen with the Euonymus elatus in South Georgia? It'll go dormant and never break bud due to lack of chilling. And after about 2 years, it just eventually dies due to starvation. So we worked with the Atlanta Botanical Garden. We planted plants up there. We did get two variegateds, but they died. We eventually took the planting out because we didn't really see anything. Well, we collected M2 seed in 2007. We got several plants that were shorter, but still they were quite large. They're nothing like the dwarfs like you want to use in the industry. All the M2 plants produce fertile seed, and so at that point we just terminated the project. So not everything works out like that, but you learn lessons as you go. Barberry is another one interested in sterility initially. Again, we treated the seed just like we did with the Euonymus, In 2005, we transferred M1 seedlings to the Center for Applied Nursery Research. In 2007, they actually produced M2 seed. In 2008, we collected all that seed, stratified it, did standard protocols, and none of it germinated after 24 months. So we may have some sterile ones. There was little seed produced on plants 2009, 2000. So we've got six very compact selections that came out of that. That we think may be sterile, but barberry doesn't grow very well in Georgia, so we definitely need to test those in more northern or western climates if anybody's interested in barberries. This was an interesting calicarpa that we got, and we've gotten seed in from the Philippines. It actually grows in the Philippines, southern China. It's called peach leaf beauty berry. It's got huge leaves on it for a calicarpa. Big white fruit. We'd grown seed out. It got no variation. Thought it'd be nice to dwarf it down a little bit. And this one was interesting because, again, we did lots of seed, did a range of treatments there, and basically radiation had no influence on germination whatsoever. So even at 150 GY, no effect on germination. Everything we sowed germinated. But we decided to grow them out anyway. And then even going to M2 populations, and we saw absolutely no variation in the M2s after growing out about 250 plants up to 7-gallon containers. So that's one where you'd have to go to a much higher rate to try to get anything with that. One we're working with now, Prunus caroliniana, cherry laurel. It's been a lot of interest with the droughts we had 2010, 2011. Heat and all. But anyway, it's an excellent drought-tolerant native shrub. The problem with it is it reseeds all over the garden. And so it's the one that the birds here in the southeast, they come and they eat the fruit, and then they go sit up in the pecan tree and poop it all over your white van. And you come out at the end of the day, and you had a white van in the morning, and it's purple in the afternoon. That's cherry laurel doing that. And so dwarf and sterile would be great. If we could do that. So seed was irradiated in 2008. Out of that, we got about 80 M1 plants, which we then took up again to the Center for Applied Nursery Research and grew those out to 15-gallon containers. They first set seed in 2011, so woody plant taking several years to produce seed. Unfortunately, the technician up there was afraid the birds would get the fruit, so he picked all the fruit green, and it turns out the fruit wasn't ripe yet, so nothing germinated. So we had to wait till 2012 to actually get our M2 population and do that. But interestingly, out of the M1 population, we actually got three plants that appear to be sterile. They produce flowers, and the flowers look fairly normal. They just don't seem to produce any pollen and aren't producing any fruit, which is absolutely wonderful. And we have one of those three is actually a relatively compact plant, nice and full, really, really nice shape on it. So we're continuing to evaluate those. But again, you always want to try and go to an M2, and this is just an example down here of the initial radiation. So this is 50 seedlings in a pot where they didn't get treated, doing 50, 100, and 1. So this is sort of what your LD50 curve looks like when you're doing these. So somewhere between 50 and 100 again would be a good dose rate for the cherry laurels. The sterile ones are all coming, I believe, out of the 100 treatment right there. So anyway, collected seed in 2012, and again, this is kind of a guessing game. It's a numbers game. You try to grow out as many as you can. And so we actually germinated about 1,300 M2 seedlings in 2013, which is a big number for us. And we actually selected this past year about 60 there for either nice fall color. We actually had this evergreen that was getting a nice purple-red fall color, or for flowering this past year and then not setting any seed. And so we've got those 60 plants in Athens, and we're growing those out to see how they will do. And then we're hoping that the several hundred that are left should flower next year, and we can continue to check those for form and or sterility. On those. Just other ones that we've tried that I thought I'd just kind of summarize everything that we had done. Not good maybe go into as much detail in terms of time. But we have tried a couple of conifers, Cupressus arizonica variety Glaber, the Arizona cypress, which does really well for us in Georgia. It unfortunately doesn't take well to mutagenesis or Rizalin or most anything else that we've tried treating it with. It's been a difficult one to work with. Cupressus cashmeriana, we tried seed. We got our plant produced seed 1 year. And there's very few clones available, so we thought it'd be an interesting way to induce some variation, but we killed everything with the radiation. So Cupressus doesn't seem to lend itself to irradiation very well, at least not at the rates we were working with other ornamentals. Duranta repens is almost a small tree. It's an herbaceous perennial for us up in Georgia. It overwinters South Georgia. It'd just be an annual for us in North Georgia. But we did get four dwarf plants out of that, but this past winter we went down to the middle teens in Tifton, Georgia. It killed all those plants. And so we definitely lost any cold hardiness that we had on that. Euonymus carnosus is a really, really beautiful plant. Makes a small tree, beautiful fall color if you're not familiar with it. It's hardy up to the Arnold Arboretum in Boston. And again, we had grown out seed populations. They were all, no variation showing up. And so again, we did radiation on it. And again, even with the radiation, we didn't see any variation through an M2 population on that. And so we've sort of dropped that one. Lorpetalum chinensis burgundy. We tried lorpetalum on that. There was a lot of interest in sort of breaking the red flowers are tied to red foliage and white flowers are tied to green foliage, maybe breaking up that linkage there. And unfortunately, we only got six seedlings out of all thousands of seed that we treated out of that. And so we're growing those plants out. We just need to collect an M2 off of those sometime and see if anything will happen there. Meletia pulchra is a neat little miniature wisteria-like plant that we grow as a perennial in Georgia, and we want to see if we can get some variation on it. Basically, what we created were some really cool dwarfs that now won't flower at all. So they're little non-flowering wisteria shrubs. So probably nothing commercial there. Myrtus communis is a shrub that I was familiar with growing up on the West Coast. Some nice dwarf cultivars out there, not a lot of variation. We tried it from seed, not a lot of variation. We did irradiation, and not a lot of variation showing up there. Raphiolepis, we thought we could induce. What we got with Raphiolepis was a lot of very weak seedlings, most of which died off eventually. Turnstromia, we took a selection copper crown, known in the trade as Clara. We did get some what looked to be like really nice dwarf plants in containers. When we went out to the field with them, though, and planted them in the ground, they resumed normal growth. And but anyways, we've got, they're producing seed, or at least fruit anyway, for the first time this year. And so we'll probably collect that off and see if anything happens in the M2. Talaparidae hamabo, used to be the genus Hibiscus hamabo, is a neat little yellow summer flowering tree that grows along the shores in South Korea and Japan, China. Give you something for yellow flowers in a small tree in the summertime when basically you don't have much else blooming other than crepe myrtles, is small flowering trees. And that's one where it has been fairly successful. We haven't seen any sterilization happen, but we do have plants that are half the size. So we've taken sort of 15-foot trees, and we do have a couple selections that are more in the 6 to 7 foot shrubby size. Like that, so that might be successful. Tacoma was I had a graduate student now, Dr. Contreras, at Oregon State, was doing a lot of breeding work with it. We tried irradiating a bunch of seed, but again, didn't have a lot of success with that. Another project, one of the first crops I started working on when I started trying my hand with some plant breeding was this Hibiscus acetosella. We tried traditional breeding on it, and everybody loved the original selection that we made, even though we did all this other But the problem with it is it's got, the flowers are the same color as the foliage, and it flowers under short days. So even if it does flower, you don't see the flowers because of the foliage. And then it flowers under a short day, so even in South Georgia, it's frozen to the ground before you'd ever see a flower on it. So you're basically growing it for the summer. It has been known to be invasive in tropical areas, so sterility would be nice. The grower said they love it, but you know, it gets 5-6 foot tall. They've got to prune it a couple times a year in the landscape. So if you could get us a dwarf one, that would be great. And then, of course, if we could get different flower color or summer flowering, that would be wonderful, too. So we bumped our numbers up. So we did 2,000 seedlings per year. We went with a fairly high rate on the radiation there. We saw absolutely no variation in M1 population. So we selfed all those in the greenhouse over the winter, grew out another acre and a half, another 2,000 plants, and saw absolutely no variation at all. So this was the first time that I experimented with EMS. So we did a variety of rates of EMS, tried to figure an LD50, settled on that, and grew out an M1 population, got no variation whatsoever, grew out the M2s after selfing over the winter, and got no variation whatsoever. So sometimes you can treat these things with lots of different things and still end up with nothing more than what you started with. And so that's part of the reason for this talk, is just to sort of share my experiences of what we've done. So the key points to wrap up the presentation in a nutshell. One, definitely start with a phenotype that's very similar to what you want to end up with. Like I said, buying red leaf barberry from seed, we got a bunch of very large barberries. If you didn't do anything to them, the euonymus, like I said, I'd never seen, basically no fall color monster euonymus before, but that's what we got from seed. So start with something very similar, because again, like I mentioned earlier, using these methods are great for changing, a trait or two. Try to run your LD50s, because literature will tell you try to find that LD50 range, and that's going to be optimum for getting the mutations that you're looking for. We only tried vegetative once. We tried lorpetalum cuttings, and we killed every single one of them, even at the lowest rate that we treated them with, which was 40. So you look in the literature, most of what I can tell is in the 20 to 30 range. 15 to 30 is where you want to be on cuttings. I think we did 40, 60, and 80 and killed absolutely everything like that. Certainly a lot more people are going to actually dosing things in tissue culture now. And again, there's some Indian literature and things where they're doing repeated treatments over five generations and picking up dwarfs on things. So that has its possibilities. And the other thing is grow out as many plants as possible. Again, this is really a numbers game. You're just randomly breaking up the chromosomes in the DNA on this. I wasn't trained as a plant breeder. I was a horticulturist, plant physiologist, soil scientist, was used to doing production studies. Initially, I thought, 200 of this, 200 of that. But you can see eventually I ended up at 2,000 and, sometimes still couldn't get anything. So that's kind of my experiences. Of course, none of this, a lot of things we do in research, and particularly students, you can't do by yourself. And, there's always help. And so, again, thanks to Wayne for irradiating all this. And, Wayne, I hope you enjoyed the summary of everything you treated for us, and see what's going on, what's worked, what hasn't worked. I've had several great technicians over the years. I'd like to thank certainly the Atlanta Botanical Garden, all the staff up there for helping me with the euonymus project, and then the folks at the Center for Applied Nursery Research, Mike and Brian, for handling thousands of seedlings over the years. And with that, I'll wrap up my presentation and